Don't touch that dial. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Next 2.5 hours, it's civil rights on the streets, on the suites, and all around the town. So stay tuned. Stay next to your phone. Call in. Let me know if you have any thoughts. The call-in number at Free Radio is 427-3772. Special focus on upcoming restrictions on folks designated mentally ill. New severe restrictions on people who are homeless. Will they all be considered mentally ill? Let's see. Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Khan, One for All, Toscanini, Dacron, Din Din, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn, Battle, Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Fargo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Katie Grace, Chopper in the Suez. We didn't start the fire, it was all we got, it was the love we learned. A man is a man who sleeps out himself still. He's kind of riding around on a bike with a sort of a wiki-up kind of attachment to it, where he has a sleeping bag and so forth attached. We're talking to a man who would like to see the sleeping band ended, but also wants to see an end of police harassment. You want to say your name or not?
Yeah, my name's Chris.
And Chris, what happened to you this evening?
I was at the, it wasn't this evening, and it was a month or so ago.
About a month ago.
Yeah, and I was passing through the park over there, had a beer unopened.
Right.
And
San Lorenzo Park?
Yes, San Lorenzo Park, and the officer said, "Is that a beer?" I said, "Sure, you know, but I haven't opened it, I haven't been drinking." And he said, "It's against the law to be in the park with alcohol, period." And he wrote me a ticket. I'm paying on a $136 fine for having a possession of alcohol.
You were transporting the alcohol through the park? That's bullshit.
Just
yeah, that's complete
through
bullshit.
Through the park. And it was in a bag he could see, because it was a plastic bag, that it was beer. And I didn't deny it, but it was against the law.
Even the officer was?
Oh, shoot, I don't know. He's on a bicycle, and he's a city police. And, you know, I wish I had his name, but...
Well, I'm sure that he goes around ticketing all the wine drinkers and the upper middle class people. You can see him. No, I'm kidding. He doesn't. He obviously goes after people like yourself. You know, you look. You know, you got a beard. You got a mustache. You know, wearing a backpack.
I'm an alcoholic. You know, and I. You know.
But were you drinking at the time?
No, I wasn't drinking.
Did you have booze on your breath?
Do you know? I have it now.
Did you have it on your breath?
No, I didn't. No. Okay. I was on my way home.
Right.
Yeah. And
well, it sounds like a bunch of shit to me, as I've said. I think that sucks. And
appreciate your helping out, buddy.
Sure.
See you guys.
Thank you, man. Thank you, Chris. We're talking to an observer, and you, sir, you've been on Westcliff Drive lately.
Yeah, I've been down on Westcliff, and I noticed there are campers, not just people living in vans, but families living in campers. And one actually asked me this evening, "Do you know a place where me and my family can park for the night to sleep?" And I didn't know of a place that would safe for them.
It is actually true that they passed a slight loosening of the law this year, earlier in the spring, that said if a business gives you written permission, up to 2 vehicles can park in the parking lot of a business. And it has been true since 1995 that up to 3 vehicles can park in the parking lot of a church. But very few churches are a part of that program, again with written permission. It is also legal 3 days out of a month to sleep in a vehicle in a driveway of a residence with the residence and the owner's permission. But again, that's 3 days of a month. So we're talking little, you know, tiny exceptions that don't really help the majority of people.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. There are a lot of people that, due to circumstance, the economy, or whatever happened to them, that have families, that have children. And for whatever reason, they're living in campers, and they need a safe place. I mean, if you can't rest, if you can't get a good night's sleep, the probability of you're feeling good enough to get out, go look for some kind of work, look for something to do, it just makes it tougher on the entire family. And I feel bad for the children, mostly for the children. They don't have any part in where they are, you know, I mean, and... for whatever reason, they're innocent victims, and there should be a place for them somewhere outside the city limits, maybe, or but just a safe area And if it needs to be enforced that you get there at 11 o'clock and you have to leave by 6 a.m., I don't think those people would have a problem with that at all. As a matter of fact, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning after a good night's sleep, maybe something to eat, would certainly prepare them better for looking for work and being a little more productive and helping themselves and their family.
Now,
and
are you
community.
Are you a Santa Cruz local yourself?
I'm a local, yeah.
How long you lived here?
About 15 years.
So you've seen this situation every year pretty much developing?
I have.
What do you do with a city council that doesn't want to do anything about it? Well, we're planning to do a protest downtown to bring the issue into the media focus.
I really don't have an answer to it. I think that, I suppose that what you're doing, protesting uniformly and in compliance with the law, I think is the way to go. I'm a Vietnam vet. If it weren't for the young people protesting the war and getting their message across that it was wrong, I might not be here today.
I'm glad you are.
So am I.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We can't give names here, but you some people you know are getting arrested for tickets, or are getting sleeping band tickets, right?
Yes, they are.
And how many people in the last month have you known who've gotten sleeping band tickets?
That's a hard number to assess.
Probably
15.
15. And,
yes.
And these are people who sleep outside.
Yes.
And these are people who you serve with. We're not going to mention a social service agency, but you are with them in that social service agency.
Yes.
And is this a hardship for them, or they just pay them and blithely go on their way?
They, of course, don't pay them because they don't have any money.
Right.
And it's just a hardship because they keep, you know, having to readdress that over and over and over. It doesn't make any sense.
And you're a troublemaker who's going up to Seattle to cause difficulty. Is that correct?
I'm going up there to stand for what I think is the truth.
In the World Trade Organization in November.
And they're going to hear about it because there's going to be a lot of people.
And you may be involved in the sleeping band demonstrations in November and December.
Yeah. This is cool.
Thank you, Nancy.
Keep it up, Robert.
And these were some tapes from October of this year on the streets when we were organizing folks signing up to join protests against the sleeping ban. We hope this winter, and we're still hoping to get some protests out there on the streets. I'm your host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert Norris. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're going to be covering a number of topics today, following up on the case of Robert Steffen, the umbrella man running for president on the bench at Church and Pacific. Used to be near Bunny Shoes until Bunny Shoes kicked him down the road with a court order, apparently because they didn't like the way he looked and the way he looked at them. That made them especially nervous. They decided that they were going to privatize public spaces in his case. And that case goes back to court shortly after Christmas, for those of you who are interested. We're also going to be doing a report from jail about the case of Steve Argue. Steve Argue is the man who punched police officer David LaFavor in defense of a woman and child who was being pain compliance holded by LaFavor, and in a situation where people had surrounded a police van that had apparently falsely arrested a woman for a boombox crime, for playing the sounds of the bombings of Yugoslavia in the doorway of the Democratic Party fundraiser at the McPherson Center last May 22nd. Anyway, Argue is serving a 9-month jail sentence. Apparently he's just gotten an extra month for declining to do work out at the farm, and he is going to be now, so that's 7 months in jail he's facing now. That usually you get 3 months off for good time. That'd be 6 months of a 9-month sentence. And they were threatening, of course, when he came in, to give him more time if he dared to, quote, organize in the jail. So all you unionists, stay out of jail, and all you folks who want to spread basic principles of human rights, be prepared to suffer more time in jail if you try to communicate that message to your fellow inmates. That seems to be how it is, at least in the Santa Cruz jail and Mark Tracy's jail, in the jail that's right across the river. It's on Water Street, right across from the county building, right before you hit the Water Street Bridge. Someone called me today asking, how do you get in to visit Steve Argue? And the answer is, it's kind of hard, because in order to do visiting in the jail, sort of a special deal for Argue, maybe it's everybody, and that would make it even worse, you have to be on a list of 6 people, which is arranged a month in advance, or they change it every month. And I guess the next time they're going to change it is mid-December. So if you want to get involved in that, I can give you a phone number to call. You can call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It also happens to be letters that spell out the phone number that you can reach me at and HUF at, 423-HUF. And I'll try and connect you with Tracy, who handles a lot of Steve's kind of comings and goings and schedulings for people who want to see him in jail. He is in jail. I saw him on Friday. He wasn't in the best of health. He had a fever. He hadn't been seen by the doctor. They declined to give him his medication. In fact, I've heard that people are denied access to their medications in jail. It's really kind of incredible. But apparently he was going to see a doctor later that day at 6 o'clock. I visited him in the morning on, I believe it was Friday morning, the day before yesterday, and kind of gave him, you get a half an hour with the prisoner. You have to show up a day in advance. You have to call a day in advance. You have to have picture ID. You have to show up half an hour in advance on the day you're visiting the jail. You can't be on probation or parole. I got to have your fingernails clean. No, just kidding about the fingernails. But it's quite a series of little hoops you have to jump through to get into the jail to talk to a prisoner for half an hour through glass. You don't get to sit in the same room with them, for example, as you would in San Francisco. When I was in jail up there for serving free food back in 96, people came to visit me, and they got to actually sit across from you where there was no glass in the way. Glass, usually, I kind of reminds me of penitentiaries or something, you know, like the Big House. I mean, this is supposed to be a jail, not a prison, but I guess it's what it is, and of course, overcrowded as ever. So anyway, Steve sent me a letter. I'm going to read you a little bit from that letter, and I will pass it on to you. I find it hard to write about people's individual situations. This is Steve writing on the 11th of December, and how they got here. I find that there are a number of heroin addicts in here, some for crimes, others for small amounts of heroin. Some are homeless, some not. Also, there's a guy who spent a number of years homeless, starting in 1994 when Judge Attic ruled in his favor, quote-unquote, on a rent strike he had carried out because of a toilet that only flushed 9 times out of 10. Judge Attic actually came out and tried to flush the toilet 3 times, and the toilet only spat back dirty water at him. So Attic supposedly ruled in his favor, but the ruling only said that he could continue to live there if he paid the back rent. Him and his girlfriend refused to pay for living in an uninhabitable dwelling. They got evicted. All of their personal belongings were in their car, including irreplaceable photos and other very important family belongings. He was arrested near his car on suspicion of looking like someone who had committed a crime. His car was also towed, even though it was parked in a legal space. They assured him that if he was found not to have committed the crime, he would get his car back. He was jailed for the weekend and released without charges. He was unable to get his car back, as had been promised. He needed to visit a very sick relative over the hill right away, so he did. When he got back a few days later, he was still unable to get his car back, and a large and growing ransom was being demanded for him to get it back. When he tried to just get his and his companion's personal possessions out of it, he was informed that it was auctioned off as an abandoned vehicle. Their things were at the dump. Him and his girlfriend soon broke up. He lived on the street for most of the time, but recently he had stopped drinking and gotten a place in Watsonville. He had saved up a lot of money from work, $1,200, and didn't know what to do with himself sober. He ran into an old girlfriend from the street, and the next thing he knew, he was drinking again. He visited his mother a week or two later. He's in his 40s. She was very upset that he had alcohol in his breath. An argument ensued. His sister called the police. He was leaving when the police showed up. His sister claims he threatened to kill his mother. He denies the claim. He was given a month in jail. He gets out on Tuesday. He may now be homeless again. And that's an example of a jail story from Steve Argue, who is a sort of our reporter in the jail, at least for the next 6 or 7 months. We also have heard that he's gotten an extra month. He had a hearing on the issue of whether he should be penalized for declining to work at the jail. And he wrote about that as well. Actually, not 1 month. I beg your pardon. It's 2 months. I just had 2 months. This is a letter from December 14th. I just had 2 months added on to the time I will be doing for refusing to do slave labor. My motto is take the profit out of mass incarceration. Just say no to slave labor. If the idea caught on, this country's growing 1.6 million prison population would begin to shrink. As long as there is a profit incentive for the mass incarceration of the poor, the system will just keep finding more excuses to put us in shackles, and America's biggest growth industry will just keep on growing. They haven't broken me, and they never will. That's Steve writing from jail. Steve Argue, again, jailed for assault on a police officer, one punch to the nose of Officer David LaFavor. In contrast, his cellmate, Aaron Birch, who was part of a gang that smashed a bottle across the forehead of Joe Barker, a homeless man, sleeping with a bunch of other homeless people innocently in an area where he was given permission to sleep. He was set upon by this gang of thugs who called themselves white separatists and smashed in the ribs, had ribs broken, and other rather serious injuries to put him in the hospital. Aaron Birch got 4 months in jail for that, and they're in the same cell block. Aaron Birch, by the way, reportedly has renounced violence, according to Steve Argue. I haven't visited Aaron Birch, so I haven't talked to him. I did interview him for this show about 2 months ago before he went to jail. And who knows, I may get in touch with his family and do a follow-up on that. We are getting reports of increased beatings. I got a report from John Telfair, the activist who concerns himself with the rights of people who are incarcerated in mental hospitals and psych wards, says an older man came up to him at the Loudoun Nelson Center metal mic crying, and apparently he was injured by a beating on the street. I haven't been able to talk to Mike, but I have talked to Raymond, head of the Loudoun Nelson Center, who confirms that such a thing has happened, according to Joanne, one of his staff workers. We have continuing beatings, in other words, and continuing inaction from the city council around a safe place for people to sleep. I remind all those outside who are new, I mean all those outside the range of my voice and also sleeping outside, all those who simply care about the issue. Santa Cruz, a city of 53,000, has a homeless population of 500 to 1,500 people. Of those, only 20% have access to shelter on any night, even with the best of circumstances. That is because the Armory shelter has shelter for 100, and then there's space on the floors of churches. And we're talking Armory shelter floor as well, by the way. This isn't any luxury accommodation. It's hard to sleep there. Everybody's in the same room. Everyone's coughing, or many people are coughing and ill. It stinks. It's not fun. I'm supposed to actually talk up the Armory because I'm told they're going to beef it up, and I'm glad they do. And in fact, I do have a motivation for telling you to come down to the Armory and sleep there, because once the Armory hits capacity at 100, and it's about 85 or 90, I think, last week, then the so-called winter exception to the camping ban sets in, which means that if they give you a ticket, if they roust you at midnight, if they make you move on, if they flash a light in your face and search through your property and embarrass and humiliate you, well, afterward, you'll be able to get the ticket dismissed, or the city attorney will dismiss the ticket because the Winter Armory shelter was full. So we can all be thankful to Mayor Byers of last year. Now it's Mayor Sugar, of course, but Byers is still on the city council for that great dispensation. Anyway, what I'm saying is there are spaces for less than 20% of the homeless population in Santa Cruz in the winter and any night, and in the summer, only 5% have legal places. The rest face $54 tickets. And now maybe be the time to bring up my guest in the studio. Let's see, how's your mic? Is your mic working? Talking to your mic. Say something.
Testing.
That's good. Yeah, let's get you a little closer. There we go. And why don't you introduce yourself, however you want to be known?
BJ.
And BJ, we ran into each other a couple days ago out at the Homeless Services Center, and you had some things you wanted to say. You're a man who's outside.
Not in the moment. I'm staying at the Armory.
Uh-huh. And how is the Armory treating you?
Actually, I have no complaint for it.
So am I defaming the Armory? Is it pretty good? I mean, give me a description of how it is to. What do? You show up at 3:30 or 4 and stand in line, and then take a bus there. What's it like?
I was given the rules that you had to sign up at 3:30 in the afternoon to get your name on the list for the bus to go to the Armory, because you're not allowed to walk up there, or you won't be able to get in. Mm-hmm. So I try to get there anytime between 3:30 and 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. depending on which load I get on, either it's the first or the second load. Mm-hmm. Either way, when I get there, I have no problem being there at night on the mat, because I always put my mat in the same spot, and it kind of like, well, serves my purpose for my benefit that I need.
Mm-hmm. How long, BJ, have you been using the Armory?
About maybe a couple of weeks.
And you're new in town, or you've been here for a while?
I was here a year ago.
So you're back?
For a short time, yeah.
Have you seen any changes in the last year that you've noticed?
Not right offhand. I'm still experiencing that.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I was on my way to the River Street shelter to get my name on the list for the Armory. Mm-hmm. And when I was crossing the intersection, there was no cars coming, and the light was green. And there was one lady was driving kind of slow. So she was nice enough to stop to let me cross over.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got over to the River Street shelter, Highway Patrol has some kind of cocky attitude, so he told me to come here. So I came over there. So he wrote me up a citation talking about I almost got hit. So I told him the lady was nice enough to let me go across. So he still wrote me the citation. I questioned him about how much does it normally cost for something like this. He said about $100. So I didn't tell him, but in the back of my mind, I said, hell no, I ain't paying for this. Not no $100 just because somebody was being considerate, you know.
I know what you mean, BJ. In fact, a year ago, about this time in December of 1998, police actually did a situation where they were ticketing people extensively for what they called jaywalking. You're talking about the light that's right next to the homeless services center as you walk across?
The intersection where the highway is.
Highway 1 and Highway 9.
Yeah, whatever that one is.
Right.
I never do keep up with it.
Well, they were methodically harassing people at the end of the year last year on this issue, and it seems that, you know, it's even extended this year to downtown Pacific Avenue on the 14th, on Tuesday, last Tuesday. City Council was taking a break. I was sitting in City Council, so I walked out downtown to talk to Robert Steffen, where we may actually hear some of this in a tape later in the show. Robert Steffen's a guy with the umbrella downtown who sits on the bench running for president, harassed by Bunny Shoes and by the police, but continues to be there as a sort of a rather quiet but eloquent protest against the fact that there is no shelter for most people in this community who are homeless. So as I stood there, I saw two police officers stand. First of all, they passed by this group of three guys who were talking, and the three guys were having fun. They didn't seem to have the most courteous attitude toward the police, but on the other hand, I didn't see any violence or threats. And the two police officers crossed the street at Pacific Avenue. This was near the Cinema 9, about half a block up. And then they stood across the street, directly across the street from these three people, staring at them for about 5 minutes. And finally, one of the guys sort of looked at the police officer and sort of said, do you want to talk to me? And it wasn't any hostile statement. And he walked across the street to talk to the police officer. And the police officer said, oh, you're jaywalking, and wrote him a ticket. And we're not talking about Highway 9 or Highway 1 or five lanes of traffic. We're talking about the one-way street on Pacific Avenue that had no traffic coming and going, really, very little at that time of evening. And although it was Tuesday, about 6 or 7 o'clock, but still there wasn't much traffic at that particular time. And it's something everybody does all the time, including the police, including merchants, including tourists. But this man, because he was homeless, got a ticket. And when his friend crossed over to talk about it, he too was threatened with a ticket. Now, of course, I started making a large hullabaloo about this, telling everybody in the area that this was selective enforcement, that this was an example of harassing one group of people when you ignore another. This is an example of class warfare, economic discrimination, or just a cop's not not liking a certain person and going after him or her because he doesn't like that person. So, yeah, it looks like
I look at it, it's actually not just because he's a cop. It's the way this society treats people like that. I mean, because of a person being homeless, it seems like a homeless person's rights are actually being taken away from them, and they don't have no right just like anybody else because we're all human no matter what our status is. In today's society, it's being overlooked.
Definitely. Now, you, how long have you been outside yourself?
I've been on the street off and on for the past 5 years.
And did this start because you decided, boy, what a wonderful thing it would be to hit the streets? Did it happen because of some crisis? Did it happen? You want to tell us how that began? Or?
Sure. I was in Georgia on the East Coast, and I was on the street at one time, and I got into this shelter, and they had a program for low-income persons, such as myself or anyone else, on disability. Mm-hmm. And I got onto a Shelter Plus program, and the only apartment, when I stayed in the shelter for 6 months because I did most of the paperwork myself. And that's what speeded up the process. And the case manager for the shelter, she helped me out to do the paperwork. And I went to look around for an apartment that would take a Section 8 certificate.
Mm-hmm. And so you yourself, you're disabled in some way? Or?
Yeah, but you know how the government is. It's a bunch of bull crap. Mm-hmm. You got to wait for their time, you know, enough to find out what you need to know.
Are you getting SSI?
Yeah, I've been getting that since 1982.
What's the nature of your disability?
That's the problem. I don't even know what it is myself. I'm trying
psychological or physical?
Like I mentioned, I don't even know because the Social Security office, no matter what city I go to, it's a 30-day wait or longer, depending on where they have to track it down, where the records are actually kept at, and what office branch that they have it in.
So, do you get checks?
I get mine's direct deposit. It's more safer for me.
I see. And so in Georgia, but 5 years ago you had a place and then lost it. Is that what happened? Or?
Well, I lost. I didn't lose it. I moved out because the simple fact is because of the apartment complex I was in. I didn't realize it was a drug area until 2 years later. After that, during that time, So I moved out because I got tired of the drug boys, you know, knocking on my door wanting to use my telephone. Mm-hmm. So I would charge them 50 cents.
Sounds like a good racket there, BJ.
Well, yeah, because the payphone was just only in the complex areas of only 5 minutes.
But you got tired of all the traffic.
Yeah.
So you moved out, and then you were unable to get other lodging? Is that what happened? Or?
Well, I wanted to start over clean, fresh.
Mm-hmm. And so did you move from Georgia, or what? How did that go?
Yeah.
And where have you been since?
Left Georgia the first part of this December and came over here.
Directly to Santa Cruz or just to different places?
Yeah, directly here to Santa Cruz. It took about 5 days for me to get here
on
the bus.
And what drew you? Of course, you were in Santa Cruz before. What originally, when was the first time you hit Santa Cruz?
About a year ago.
And how did that happen?
Hitchhiked just to see what it was about. Just to pick up information here and there.
Were you like traveling up and down the coast, or did you just come directly to Santa Cruz?
Directly.
So you heard about Santa Cruz from somewhere else?
No, I just wanted to see what California was altogether, to be honest about it.
So you sort of ended up in Santa Cruz without heading for Santa Cruz?
Right.
And how does Santa Cruz seem to you?
Well, when I came here a year ago, I heard about the Elm Street shelter, and that's where I was staying at. It was nice and warm. Then I told the pastor over there about my situation. So he told me I could stay there for one more night. And it was cold the next night, and I didn't have no place to go.
This was a year ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the pastor told me that I couldn't stay there except for that one more night. So that last night he gave me, I was out on the street. I was like, hell no, I ain't going to take this street. If I got to take this street, I'll leave Santa Cruz and go someplace else.
Mm-hmm. And so you did?
Yeah.
And where did you go?
I went wherever I could.
And did you find shelter? Were you on the streets there, too?
Well, over on the East Coast, we call them rabbit boxes. You sleep wherever you can.
And they don't have a sleeping ban? They don't arrest you for sleeping outside on the East Coast?
Oh, no, not in Georgia, not in Savannah, no. When I was in Savannah for 21 years, all the police officers, they know me. They know my situation, et cetera, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I told one cop, well, several cops on different occasions, that I didn't have no place to go. I couldn't get into the shelters because of this reason and that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me advice that to hide out someplace and not be seen. So therefore, if you was homeless over there on the East Coast, you wouldn't have that problem with the city police. So that was kind of easy for me, but I got tired of it, and it wasn't really benefiting me none.
Well, I know Atlanta, that homeless won some kind of lawsuit. And they were able to, because they got the cops to treat them differently, and I'm going to actually talk more about that in another show. Have you ever gotten a sleeping ticket here or been harassed by the police? Well, it sounds like you've been harassed by the California Highway Patrol person, but any other forms of harassment that you've either experienced or seen here?
Not right offhand, not that I can say off the tip of my tongue.
Would you say the police are otherwise treating you properly or other people properly? Would you say that you're not sure? Would you have any comment on that?
I would have to say not sure because I haven't been fully experienced with it yet. I just sit back and see what happens and figure out what's going on with the problems that's going on.
We also have heard...
Just like yesterday, I was sitting over across the street from Noah's Bagel on Pacific.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting in this windowsill of this one store. And I sat there for about 10 minutes carrying my bags and sat down to smoke a cigarette, take a break. The downtown host came up, tell me this crap about, oh, you can't be sitting in the windowsill. So I questioned him. I said, well, why are you telling me this? I mean, nobody's getting hurt. Nobody doing, everything's peaceful. There's no harm being done. He said, well, I'm just reminding you. I said, I was like thinking in my mind, why the hell are you reminding me of this? He said, well, if a cop comes up, he's going to give you a citation. I said, for what? There's no harm being done. Nobody else is complaining.
Exactly. What he was telling you about was a law passed in 1994 under pressure from the merchants called the Downtown Ordinances, actually a number of them. One of them makes it illegal to sit within 10 feet of a store window or entrance. I know, it's pretty weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's crap. I mean, I think, frankly, when I see that happening, I encourage everybody to just sit right down there, everybody all at once, just start sitting, because I think that it's a form of merchants taking over public spaces that should belong to all of us. I mean, these sidewalks are public places. They're not just profit-making instruments for merchants. That's how I look at it. So, BJ, is there more you want to talk about? I mean, I guess we've heard a lot about what's called troll bustings, beatings of homeless people by vigilantes, and some people say people connected with the police, although that's been claimed. I've not been able to get a first-hand testimony on that. I've gotten second-hand testimony. Any acts of violence directed against you or against people you know since you've been here?
Well, over at the River Street Shelter, you get a lot of people that has bad days, not because of alcohol and drugs, because of the situation they're in, and it does not solve their problem or any other body's problem when they're homeless.
But you yourself haven't been hit by anybody or heard of people getting hit in the last couple of weeks when you've been here?
I've seen two guys that tried to get in a fight over at the River Street Shelter over something that really makes no sense whatsoever.
But we're not talking about, that's a sort of an inter-homeless thing. We're not talking about people coming down on homeless people from outside, like, you know, like a gangs of youths kind of roaming around beating people up or anything like that.
I haven't seen that yet.
Right. Well, that's good. I hope you don't see that. Is there anything more you want to say, BJ? I'm going to move on shortly to another subject. You're welcome to hang with me and kind of keep an ear on what's going on, make comments if thoughts come to mind. Anything you want to conclude with yourself at this point?
Not at the moment, but I will when I'm trying to find something in my bag. Something that you mentioned earlier.
We're going to talk about the new psychiatric oppression coming down.
Well, there. Not that one. About the public places of homeless people.
Okay, well, you check for that.
See if yeah, it has to do about a situation that happened to a guy named Richard Kramer in Morristown, New Jersey. When I find out, I'd like to share that thought.
Okay, you look for that, and we'll press on with that. Thanks. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're going to do another quick little interview from times past, and then we're going to get into some discussion of the upcoming measure on detaining mentally ill people that is coming down the pike at us, and not too happily. So you can call in, join the conversation at 427-3772, or you can call us off air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or you can call Free Radio. If you want to talk to Free Radio and not to this show, but want to maybe be a part of the Free Radio Collective or learn more about Free Radio, the phone number is 427-4523. To Gina. Hi, Gina.
Hi. How
are you? Good. And you say that what's been happening to you, you think is relevant that folks should know about or want to understand more about what it's like to be homeless, or what's happened that you think we should know about?
Well, that we all have a concept of what homelessness is, and we all think that it's they got to be losers, you know. Everybody in the United States has some help from the government somehow, and I think God gave me a zap in the head, and I lost my brakes in my motorhome and ended homeless and ended in a shelter in a church. And I have been helped incessantly by the folks at the homeless center to get my life together, and without them I could have done it. I've worked all the time that I have been homeless, but without the center and its support and using the fax and using the phone and keeping in touch with my family, I couldn't have survived.
How long have you been homeless?
Well, I'm not homeless right now, but I was homeless for a year.
And you said that you mentioned the clock tower at some point?
Yes, I was working for a very prestigious, well-known company that serves a lot of homeless people, but it's an insurance company. And I went to the clock tower. They were having a homeless kind of rally. And there was some TV cameras and stuff like that. And I mentioned where I worked at. That was on a Friday night. And I was dressed very nicely. And I mentioned my name and where I work, how much I made, and my boyfriend, how much he made. And we're still homeless, and we still can't survive, because when you're homeless, it's so much more expensive to survive.
And the job folk, your employer has helped you out to survive by
by firing me on Monday.
to show you how to, you know, to proceed on your own, to give you some of that genuine American, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, yeah. If you have bootstraps.
Well, I even contested it by saying, because they didn't blatantly say it, that it was because I was homeless. They knew I was homeless when I got hired. I always appear very professional, three-piece suit, even though I had to go as early as possible to the showers over here in the homeless place because I was leaving in my van, you know, and I brought that up to the supervisor. Do you realize how much harder it is for me to be professional looking and be here on time every day like I am? I think that that should be counted for something. And he says, well, during different circumstances, you'll be an excellent employee. So I took that as what happened the previous Friday.
Because you spoke out about the issue of homelessness.
And I mentioned the place, yes, and I mentioned the place, and I mentioned how much I made, and now
what
I
was the place, by the way?
I can say,
yeah.
Santa Cruz County Health Options at the time.
Health for some, but not so healthy for others.
No. The guy, as a matter of fact, was retiring at the end of the week, so, I mean, he went out of his way to make sure that I got rid of before he left. So I took it very, I mean, it was like...
All for your own good, of course.
Yes, of course. It was like a blow because to my my lifeline was work. I have to work. And nobody believes that I was homeless. Even some clients that I have now don't believe that.
Even I think you're lying, of course.
Of course. But it's so screwed up, the picture that we have of homeless people, you know. And the sad part of it is that I did also mention the CIA, the drugs that are coming through the country.
Not our CIA.
And so I think that I went a little bit too far on the soapbox, you know, and
sure.
That, yeah.
You're obviously a wingnutter, should be 5150.
Yeah, really. It's just that I cannot understand how many people are suffering, families and children, how much abuse is out there against the homeless just for being homeless, just for looking different. And nobody believes that that could happen to them in a wink of an eye.
Thank you. Again, we've been talking to
Gina Valeva.
Hey, Gina. Thank you for your candor.
Thank you so much for being here for us.
And with that, why don't we segue into the next segment of Bathrob Spears Broadsides here on 96.3 to talk about a proposed law change coming down the pike in January, which would radically alter and restrict the rights of those accused of being mentally ill and for that reason needing forced incarceration, forced treatment. Here's the story. This is from the Los Angeles Times of December 16th. Measure on detaining mentally ill planned. Sacramento. Is by Dan Moraine. Patients could be held longer against their will, but also could win early release by agreeing to follow treatment plans. Vowing to reopen debate over California's landmark mental health care law, two legislators Wednesday proposed the first bill in a decade to make it easier for authorities to treat severely mentally ill people against their will. Legislation would overhaul the 1967 Lanterman-Petras Short Act that helped speed the emptying of state hospitals for the mentally ill and greatly expanded the rights of severely mentally ill people to refuse treatment. I'm going to pause briefly because we have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robot, Fred G.
Hey, Fred.
How's it going?
Have you been listening to the show? Or?
No, actually, I was talking to a lady, Willow Simmons, who was speaking at the council meeting about, you know, homeless issues and things.
Oh,
like
about
that.
The failure of Mayor Sugar to do shit about homeless issues in terms of his own homeless issues task force, which asked him to put on hold the sleeping and camping ordinances until safe zones were set up, or at least bring that up on the agenda, even if he couldn't get it passed.
Well, as you know, Robert, I feel like it's a good goal, but with two votes, it's not going to go very far. I understand you feel like it needs to be done anyway.
Well, the way to get it to go somewhere, I guess I thought, and so did the 10 members of the homeless issues task force unanimously voted for this after studying it for 3 months, was that you can't get the public to understand unless you appeal to the public in a way that makes the issue legitimate, and they hoped that Sugar would do that by at least putting the issue on the December 14th agenda. He, of course, refused to do that. He refused to put anything on the agenda, as far as I can see. At least nothing has appeared on that agenda regarding homeless people except an appeal that a homeless woman herself filed for $50. And additionally, he refused to bring up the issue as an emergency item, which, although it would have required 5 votes to put it on the agenda, at least, again, the issue would have been raised in the public mind by the very discussion.
I understand the strategy, Robert. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but at least you're trying. And I was happy to see that I was wrong on the projected outcome on my part of that appeal on the parking restrictions. It seemed that you guys did your work there with some of the homeless task force people, meaning you guys educated the council on that subject so they could...
Let me clarify what that is for the audience. I appreciate you saying that, because you indeed are on the Transportation Committee, or Commission, which originally heard that appeal or heard that concern by some residents on Almore Avenue, which we understand it was orchestrated by Officer Jim Howes of the Police Department. Famous, of course, for arresting people in front of the homeless shelter in 1989 when there was no place at the Civic Auditorium. I remember that one personally. And then more recently for threatening Bob LaMonica with tickets for circulating a rent stabilization initiative, and again, apparently receiving no discipline on this matter and not much direction, and misinforming people about the nature of the current camping ordinance, which apparently he was telling residents he could not enforce it under the existing situation, that they needed to put up little signs in front of get the city to put up no parking signs at night that would bar vehicles from parking in what wasn't even a residential area. The two, I guess, relatively short parts of Almore Avenue where this issue was raised were within a block of residences, but weren't actually in front of residences, as I understand it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit sneaky. I think the Transportation Commission realized that we had been given it as a strictly, this originated from the neighbors and 60% of them want this, which is, your typical system that we have for things like speed bumps or red curbs or anything like that, and that we didn't realize that there was more to it at the time, and it was good that since there was more to it, there wasn't just a strictly procedural agenda item at the end of our agenda late on one evening, that it did get the attention. I have to compliment Lady Laura.
Laura Tucker, yeah. She's of course, works. She was originally a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force. Now she's one of the staff members, although she gets paid $5, and Don Lane gets paid $20 for staff work. Interesting discrepancy in terms of...
I hope it's not $5, Robert, because that's below the minimum wage.
It is, I'm afraid.
something is wrong.
Well, I think it's $5. Maybe it's $5.75. But I thought it was $5 for Laura and $20 for Don. And that could be, it's a strange situation. Chris, what we need is what the Homeless Issues Task Force indeed recommended. Was a homeless staff be hired, or formerly homeless staff, instead of a former mayor who's a crony of Mayor Byers, or former Mayor Byers and himself.
Well, maybe he would have been homeless if he didn't get the job, right?
I don't think so.
I couldn't buy that, huh?
Anyway, regarding the Almore Avenue appeal, this again was to me it was a tempest in a teapot. I mean, even if you get the right to park at night, you don't get the right to sleep at night. It's illegal everywhere in the city. And police officers, I've gotten reports of one car window recently being broken by the police. They didn't give him a ticket. They just broke his window, and they claimed that they had heard stuff inside, and they had a right to break in order to find it.
Was that a bargain for the person, and was it less than a $56 window?
I don't know what the cost of the window was. We could start doing a cost-benefit analysis here. That'd be very, very cool.
That's like what Mike Rotkin says we did on our large police cars. There's this cost-benefit analysis that proves it's better for the city to have the full-size, monstrous-type police cars.
Was this the car that Mayor Byers took the keys to at the police station opening ceremony?
I haven't been able to get a copy of the cost-benefit analysis, though, somehow.
Well, the chief sometimes kind of holds up on those figures. Like, I noticed, for instance, that when council member and now Mayor Sugar said that he couldn't really vote for the shoulder tap law, the law that would make it illegal for a young person to ask for liquor from an adult, even if that was all it was a request that he buy liquor for him, but that it went no further than that. There were no stats that Belcher could show that went into whether the similar laws had good impacts in other cities, what the current stats were on arrests around this issue, what the costs would be, how much time police are putting into it. All these questions were raised, I think, by people in the audience. I believe believe you spoke on the issue, and I spoke on the issue, and a lot of good speakers. And then you had your line of what I consider to be social service hacks and police officials, not necessarily misstating, but I don't think really giving the whole issue, and more important, directing themselves to the relevant questions. And as we know, that whole thing was it was supposed to come back on the December 14th agenda with information from Chief Belcher about what the statistics were about arrests for alcohol and the current program, and whether there was a real process in the so-called ordinance change that would allow a young what penalties a young person would get. It seems that the chief was not too clear on that issue.
Well, I thought what was interesting was that the council made this gesture to go down to the Santa Cruz High School cafeteria so they could hear what the young people had to say about it. And the young people said, I think by about a 9-to-1 ratio, that we think it would be much more effective to have the money spent instead of having police time and jail facilities and all this provided to enforce this law. It would be much more effective to provide social services to eliminate the problem at the root instead of trying to punish people at the other end of the problem. And I was wondering, as I said at the council at that time, why, if they were going to be making a big show out of going down to listen to what they said, the kids, how could they possibly vote in the opposite direction after having heard what they heard from the majority of the same kids?
Well, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Since you mentioned police a few times, that's a subject that I wanted to comment on briefly.
Before you do, let me finish up Shoulder Town. I found it interesting that though they went to the high school, they went there several hours after the high school had closed for the day in a half-day session, so most of the people wouldn't be there. And also, they didn't go to the more important and better educated and, I think, more politically effective and conscious university campus, where I think they would have gotten a lot of flack from students for this proposed, essentially it's a straight First Amendment violation. It says, you know, if I say to you, I want you to kill this guy, and you don't do anything, that's not a crime. Mm-hmm. But if I say, I want you to buy a beer, then suddenly it's a crime. I mean, it's clearly an act of speech.
Well, I noticed that the ACLU had opposed the potential law, the proposal.
Right.
So I think that's probably the reason they had in mind.
I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer, and we actually had a debate on it between council members Crone and Rotkin here on the air, and a less effective debate than I
missed that. Yeah, sorry, I didn't get to hear that.
It's actually on tape, and it can be obtained for anybody who's listening, all you listeners out there. Give a call to 423-